Call the meeting to order. Representative Johnson moves the minutes of the March 8th meeting. Any questions, concerns with respect to those? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. We are looking for authors. I see that we've got Representative Poppy. Are you? She was right there.
She's right outside the door, sir.
We've got. Yeah, why don't you?
Mr. Chairman, as long as we've got a break in the action, or if you need a stall. I was a little concerned. I noticed that House File 1609 had been added to the agenda for today. And as best as we can check on the website, this is referred to consumer labor and consumer and was never, at least maybe the website isn't updated, but it's never heard in committee and has been brought up tonight. I understand being fluid in the near deadline situation, but I also don't want to let it go too far. We're running fast and loose, and if this one didn't pass down in Chair Dabney's committee, and if it's coming up, you know, especially the late date, for the members of the, at least from our side of the aisle in the committee, this is a strong concern.
Oh, and it's a fair concern, Representative Zellers. I think, unfortunately, we don't have Chair Dabney here from the division, but my understanding was that he reviewed some of the bills that were in his committee. And I basically have a blanket. If I think it's even possibly related, I send stuff down. He takes a look. Anything that that he doesn't believe is within their jurisdiction, he'll kick back up. So we've done that on a handful of bills, some of which have come before the committee. Most have not, quite frankly, and are just sort of sitting out there in purgatory. But that's all that happened with the bill.
Sure. Well, and Mr. Chairman, in deference to some of our members, looking just a quick flip of the bill, it looks like it's maybe a little bit more controversial than some of the others that have come up that on short notice we haven't had any problem with, and this may fly under that radar of being a little bit more controversial than a 12-hour notice. Or 24-hour notice is one thing, but a 12-hour notice is a little more concerning for some of our members.
Fair enough, Representative Zellers. Perhaps what we could do if we get an opportunity is we'll hear the testimony, we'll kind of get a sense for how controversial it might be, and we'll make a decision on whether to act on it or not. But I do know that one of the witnesses with respect to that bill is traveling, like leaving the country, relatively soon, so there might be some impetus to at least hear that portion of the testimony.
Sure. I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Paulson.
Mr. Chairman, and just to follow up on that, and I want to compliment you and Elizabeth for sending out the notices so far ahead of time, because that is very helpful for planning purposes, you know, just so we kind of know what's coming up. And obviously things move back and forth and get taken off the agenda. I think the only red flag, and I know the rules require a three-day notice or as far as practicable, and so it is helpful just to have at least a little bit of more of a notice just to prepare. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
We're doing, and thank you, Representative Paulson. I give all the credit to Elizabeth. She comes in and visits with me every Thursday, and we try to get a full week's worth out. Granted, some are dropped, some are added, but we do the very best we can to keep not just you folks, but everybody up to speed, and there's a lot of advocates that want to be involved as well. With that, we've got, I'm just looking for authors that are now in the room. We've got Nelson is now in the room. Representative Nelson, House File 1190 is the Plumbing Council established. Chair moves House File 1190 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on GovOp, Reform, Technology, and Elections. Representative Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman, members. House File 1190 establishes a plumbing council, actually a plumbing board, and puts the duty for making for propagating the building codes for plumbing to the plumbing board, as opposed to having people that don't know about the industry, don't work in the industry, don't have any idea what the industry is going on. It's the people, the professionals, the contractors, the plumbers, and people that work in the industry that are the ones that will be looking at the codes and saying that, yeah, this works, yeah, this doesn't work. And that's what the bill does.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Before your witness testifies here, the folks, I'm having trouble hearing down here, and I'm actually sitting directly across from the witness. If you've got conversations, please either have them quietly or take them outside the room. Thank you very much. Representative Nelson, you have somebody here to visit with us this afternoon.
I have Carl Crimmins here from the Pipe Trades Council.
Mr. Crimmins, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carl Crimmins. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association. And we're here to talk about Senate File 1190. And we wanted to take an advisory council, change the words advisory council to a board, and give the board some rulemaking authority when it relates to the plumbing code and the licensing of plumbers, contractors, and apprentices.
Thank you. Mr. Crimmins, are we aware of any testimony in opposition to this bill or anyone else that desires to be heard with respect to this bill? We have an amendment from Representative Burns. Representative Burns, you wish to move the A1 amendment?
Actually, I think that's mine, Mr. Chairman. I apologize.
Is he your page now? He delivered it. thank you,
though.
Oh, never mind.
Very similar.
Representative Sellers, you move the A1?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, you want me to...
Representative Zellers, can you tell us what it does, and sure. Then we'll get the author's reaction to it.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. In Representative Nelson's bill, there are many parts of it that we do find to be within reason, having folks who are in the industry helping to stay up on technology, stay up on current procedures for something new that's coming out. The only problem that we see with the bill, Mr. Chairman, and hence the amendment, is that we're going to have the folks who have a vested interest in keeping the number of new people in the industry licensing those new people. Wouldn't be a fox guarding the hen house necessarily, but pretty close. And the representative board doesn't have what you'd consider nonpartisan or non-preferential people. So if I were in one of the commercial plumbing contracting businesses and at a corner on the market, not saying that some of the folks here or the testifier would do that, but in the event that there were a bad actor on the board and swayed a few members, we could all but shut down anybody new coming into any one of these industries. But we do see the value in having the folks who are working in the trade every day advising the board. They can still make some of the same recommendations. It just leaves the license with those people, again, government chalking the field, deciding the boundaries, and then letting the players on the field sort it out for who's going to get the most business, who's going to be the most productive, who's going to make the most money.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Representative Nelson, any reaction to that?
I would not be in favor of the amendment. I think the governor appoints the members to this board. There's contractors on this board. There's working plumbers on the board. And these people, being the contractors are on there, they're going to want to make sure that it stays as open as possible because they're going to be competing with each other. It's only for, I believe, it's an initial two-year term that they serve on this board, so the governor can have the chance to reappoint. I would not be in favor of the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Zellers, final word?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Nelson, that's exactly the point. We have the folks who have a vested interest in the industry that are going to be on there, no matter which the governor, and in this case, maybe our Governor Pawlenty would appoint folks he wouldn't like. Should the political wind switch and it switches parties, maybe it goes the other way. Leaving it with the nonpartisan people in the Commerce Committee, realizing the Commerce Commissioner is appointed, but the folks who are doing the licensing aren't necessarily in the industry. They're not going to have to worry about anybody new coming in and stealing business away, whereas these folks, even as well-intentioned as you may have it in the bill and in this advisory council, in the back of their minds, it's still that person over there is going to be competing for my business if he or she gets into the industry.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Other comments or questions? Representative Ansel?
Mr. Chairman, and to the amendment, I'd urge a no vote on the amendment. Competition is a good thing. And I'm rather shocked that you wouldn't support a competitive construction environment. For that reason, I'd urge a no vote.
Okay, anything further with respect to that? We've got the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. Are there any other amendments with respect to House File 1190? Seeing none, further discussion. Representative Burns.
And just a question to the author. Representative Nelson, thanks for bringing this forward.
Mm-hmm.
I have had some experience in dealing with these boards in the governor's office. 4 years I was responsible for making board appointments. And I just had a couple questions. First, it looks like there's a 4-year term followed by a 3-year term. In every other board that we dealt with, it was always a 4-year term. It just, I'm asking, how did you end up with that number?
Representative Nelson.
I'll let
Mr. Crimmins.
Mr. Crimmins answer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we tried to start the board out and stagger the terms. After the initial term, they'll all be 4-year terms. This was so that the whole board would not be replaced at one time.
Okay.
Anything further?
And a second question.
Ms. Burns.
On all the other boards, and I handled 68 different boards, and most of them are health licensing boards, and they have consumer members on them. But there's also other boards that have consumer members, not just the doctors and the nurses, but the architects, engineers, land surveyors, interior designs. The Supreme Court appoints boards for attorneys that also have consumer members. And we have found, in going through the appointments process, that perspective was very valuable. We had plenty of other folks on the board for expertise. And we just wanted the average Minnesotan, someone possessing common sense and the willingness to stand up and say, what are we doing here, on behalf of the average consumer of plumbing services. And their job was, in these other boards, to protect the public. And I think it's just a valid reason to make sure we have well-qualified plumbers, because it is in essence, it becomes a public health issue. It's a very valuable profession. Is there a reason why consumers weren't included?
Representative Nelson?
I'll get it, pass it over to Carl Crimmins here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, what we've tried to do to keep the board as small as possible but effective, we used plumbing inspectors, municipal plumbing inspectors, one from Metro, one from Greater Minnesota. We know these inspectors on a daily basis. Have contact with the citizens in their homes and at their workplace. They hear the problems. If there's problems in the industry, these inspectors are interfacing with these citizens every day, and we thought part of their job of sitting on the board would be to bring their concerns to the board. So they would be a plumbing inspector. We would get some plumbing experience, and we would get public input from the inspectors as they meet with the public every day.
Representative Burns,
and just a comment, and I understand that, but I have found, and this is through practice, and many, many other boards have a pure consumer member, someone who has no income at all, profession being provided, and I've just found that works pretty well. And I know some folks who would be licensed would be concerned that you're bringing in somebody who has no knowledge, and in some cases, common sense is good enough, and often, and I can probably tell you a couple stories afterwards about a case that came through the medical board where the decision was more or less made, and the consumer stood up and said, wait, this isn't right, and really caused the whole board to shift because you bring someone from outside the profession, which I think is useful. So I'd ask that maybe you consider adding that. I know you don't want these boards to be too big, but I think Minnesota consumers are pretty smart, and I think they might add something.
Thank you, Representative Burns. Valuable insight. Representative Paulson was next, and then Zellers. And
Mr. Anderson. Chair, Representative Nelson, does the Department of Health support the bill?
Representative Nelson?
No. It's
Mr. Crimmins?
Mr. Chairman, Representative. Plumbing has been moved over by executive order to the Department of Labor and Industry. And they're not in favor of this.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, does the Department of Labor favor the bill?
No. Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, they do not.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I would hope that, I mean, some of the concerns Representative Burns laid out, because I see this as potentially taking away competition, and you should have some conversations. If the governor's going to veto the bill, I think you should have some conversations ahead of time about it just to, you know, save some time.
Another excellent point, Representative Paulson. Representative Zellers.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Mr. Crimmins and to Representative Nelson as well. And I actually check with Representative Mahoney. How many times do you get a fair or honest answer out of an inspector when coming before and representing the average consumer? no offense, but I think the average consumer would probably raise more problems with the inspectors than maybe they would with some of the plumbers. So it begs the point even more. I won't step on Representative Burns' toes here, but the consumer part of this missing is a huge gaping hole to me. I think that should be added in. And again, to Representative Anzalt, this is all about competition. You know, we don't want a set group of people who are already in the industry deciding who does and doesn't get to come in. That's what this council will do.
And Representative Mahoney, to that point, and only that point, right, because Representative Anderson is being very gracious in allowing you to talk to that point.
You know, I've spent a long time this year working on with the department and sometimes not with the department on these boards. And many that particular question and that particular concern has come up often. What I would ask that people take into consideration on this board and all the boards coming down the pike today is that these boards are not changing the code. They're not putting how many 2x4s into a wall, how many feet of pipe into a building. They are deciding how you adopt the code. Now, they do adopt amendments, but when these boards adopt a code is developed, we've gone to a nationwide code. So it's developed by an overarching committee someplace out east or out west or wherever the best convention can be had. This board accepts that code, and then in the state of Minnesota, rather than in Florida where you can bury sewer lines 18 inches underground, adopts the amendment that says in the state of Minnesota you have to be below the frost line or 60 inches. That's what these boards are doing. They are not, and I'm not sure that a consumer quite understands the difference on they may understand on a frost line, but they may not understand the difference between Schedule M, type M copper, type L copper, type K copper, nor would they really want to know the difference between those three types of copper. So a consumer, I think you're better off having, as this bill is structured right now.
Representative Mahoney, Representative Anderson, and hopefully this will be the last comment because I know that there's several authors and folks that want to testify on some other bills before we get to the 5 o'clock schedule. And Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps if Representative Nelson, I noticed the section here that talks about fees and finances. Can you give me a ballpark figure of how much of the budget would be for something like this and how much fees would increase for plumbers, and I'm assuming that would increase fees for consumers. I'm assuming the plumbers themselves would just pass that on to the services that they provide to consumers.
Representative Nelson?
Actually, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the fees in that would not change at all. This is basically the same setup that we have now with the advisory councils. The only cost would be running the council, their paperwork, the per diem that's paid to the members that serve on this board, and that's already ongoing in current law. It's just basically changing it from an advisory council that gets ignored at times when they bring stuff forward and to a board that has the regulatory authority to propagate these codes and put them in place and look at the ones that work and don't work, and that's what this is about. So it's not going to change the cost of it at all.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, does the department currently state the budget for this advisory council, or does the advisory council submit a budget to the commissioner to approve or deny?
Representative Nelson or Mr. Cremins?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure. I wouldn't want to misspeak. I assume, which is not a good thing, that the department just handles the per diem for the advisory council, but I'm sure there's someone in the audience from the department that could answer the question.
Well, why don't we get an answer for Representative Anderson and supply that to her? Do you need that this instant, or can we move this bill?
We can wait. I just want to make the point, though. I'm assuming that in some regard the department either approves or denies the budget, has some kind of conversation with the advisory council now. And I'm just wondering, now that this control would be in the hands of the council, that, you know, they could raise it to meet whatever desires they had at the moment. I have some concerns about that, and was wondering if Representative Nelson, if you would be willing to put some language in this bill that limits it to have a closer scrutiny on that so that we don't have a situation where the budget is increasing fees significantly on plumbers that then pass this on to consumers.
Representative Nelson?
If there's somebody from the department here that can answer her original question. But I think what it does is that basically they put in an annual budget of what the costs are going to be for their per diem to run their meetings that they have, and that's what the commissioners will collect the fees necessary that they need and keep the rest of the fees themselves. Currently, those fees are going to the commissioner as it is. So,
okay, Representative Mahoney, to that point,
I have the financial bill right here. They're dropping they're cutting the budget of this particular division, labor and industry, by well over $1.5 million, and most of it's in fees associated with construction permits and licensing. So, I don't think you've got a concern there. Representative Anderson.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, maybe Representative Mahoney can help me out on this. So you're saying the department is currently cutting it. Does this mean that we're adding an increase to the department's budget from what they proposed?
Sure. Representative Mahoney, are you able to address that?
I certainly can. No, we are not. This is already figured into the budget.
Representative Anderson, anything further? Representative Dominguez, you had a comment or question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Subdivision 2, where it says power, 2.11, where it says elect its own officers. Can one bring someone forward to be elected to this board?
Representative Nelson.
Or how does that work?
I'm not sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative, that was worded that once the board is appointed by the governor, the board would elect its chairman. And that would be the only officer that the board would have, would be a chairman and maybe a deputy chairman in case the chairman is indisposed. But it was just to say that the board would vote the chairman to have the agenda and run the meeting.
Anything further? Seeing none, the chair renews his motion that House File 1190 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on GovOps. Any further things? Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Bill passes. Thank you, Representative Nelson. You got a two for today, Representative Nelson. Chair,
yes.
Will move House File 1283 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on GovOps. Representative Nelson.
House File 1283 deals with workers' risk misclassification in the construction industry, and I've been working with the Commissioner of Labor and Industry, Commissioner Brenner, to get language and get this bill put together since before the beginning of session. And it's to deal with people that currently are out there being misclassified as independent contractors when they're truly employees. As an independent contractor, they're not getting workers' comp paid on them. They're not paying into unemployment. Taxes not being withheld on these employees. And they're cheating the system, and they're creating an unfair advantage to the people that are cheating on the system, for our contractors out there who are paying their employees and withholding taxes. And it's an advantage that goes to the people that are abusing the system. And what this bill is getting at, this is a way, it's a setting up a system through the Department of Labor and Industry, giving the Department of Labor and Industry the ability to monitor this. They register with the Department of Labor and Industry, and as they move forward, then the Department of Labor and Industry will be able to audit them to make sure that they are truly working as independent contractors. And if they're not, they can find them, they can pull their certificate they're going to get, and it'll help kind of clean up the industry as a whole.
And Representative Nelson, is it fair to say that Commissioner Brenner and Daly are on board with the bill?
I've been working with the Commissioner Brenner, and he's on board with the bill. There's a couple of tweaks in here, and just before I came down here, I got a phone call from him. He's got some concerns with it. I'm working with him, and I've given my guarantee that I'll work with him to try and get whatever, as we move forward, whatever language we need to get this to move forward.
All right. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Questions, comments, or is there any, I should first ask, is there anyone that desires to be heard with respect to House File 1283? Okay, questions, comments, concerns from members? If not, Chair will renew his motion that House File 1283 be recommended pass and refer to the Committee on GovOps. Any further discussion or comments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Congratulations. Thank you, Representative Nelson. House File 571, Representative Hillstrom is defining best value, changing provisions for acquisition and competitive bidding. Representative Hillstrom, welcome to the committee. Chair will move House File 571 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on GovOps. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill was heard last night in Representative Dabney's committee, or yesterday, I guess it was. This bill defines best value for the purpose of contracting, constructing buildings, alterations, improvements, or repairs. This bill authorized the use of best value contracting for state and local projects. I want to be brief and respecting your time. I am currently working with all stakeholders on this issue. We have a stakeholder meeting again set for tomorrow. We don't have an amendment that everyone agrees to, but I do promise to continue to work on the issue, Mr. Chair. Currently, the University of Minnesota has the authority to do this, and they stated in the last committee that they saved somewhere between 13 and 15% on their projects that they've used so far. I think that this is in the best interest of local units of government to have this ability as well, and the League of Minnesota Cities is here, as well as the Association of Minnesota Counties, if you have questions to ask of them. Also, MNSCU thought that this would be a great tool in their toolbox. So with that, I would turn it over to the testifiers that I do have here.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Who's up first?
Mr. Chairman, the members of the committee, my name is Richard Miller, and I am the attorney for the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council, and we are testifying in favor of Representative Hillstrom's bill. This is a bill that does not do away with the traditional low-bid contracting law. It's a supplement to low-bid, and it's intended to enable a user, a state, county, city, to consider other factors than just the low bid. And those factors are set forth in the bill that has been introduced by Representative Hillstrom. As Representative Hillstrom indicated to you, we have been working with and trying to involve everybody in this process. We've had one meeting, what we call a stakeholders meeting, that was convened by Representative Hillstrom. We have another one tomorrow. It would be presumptuous of me to say that everybody is totally on board with the bill as drafted, but I think that we have made some headway, and we are continuing to work with the stakeholders to try to perfect the bill. Any questions from the members?
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I think we're going to take the testimony first, and then we'll see if there's questions. Mr. Melander.
Chairman Atkins, committee members, my name is Harry Melander. I'm the executive secretary of the St. Paul Building and Construction Trades Council. We in the building trades appreciate the opportunity to come in front of you today. Best value contracting is a tested, proven method of construction for contracting. It's an alternative to the low bid, and it requires projects to be awarded to contractors for offering the best combination of price, high-quality performance, instead of just the lowest bid. Under House File 571, state and local governments would still have the option to either continue using the low bid system or use the best value system for construction contracts. Best value contracts rewards contractors who have trained skilled employees, such as folks that we represent, and have demonstrated the ability to finish jobs on time and on budget. Best value contracting is good for state and local government because it saves taxpayers money and provides flexibility to agency. This is a real good issue for government. Best value contracting is proven and tested. The federal government uses best value contracting, as do a number of state governments. Best value has already had great results at the University of Minnesota. The university has a pilot project that has used best value for a number of mechanical, electrical, and roofing projects. Best value contracting is good for taxpayers, and examples that were given in prior committee member committee meetings. Actually, University of Minnesota representatives indicated that there were savings of 13%. In conclusion, I'm supporting the passage of this. We believe that best value, the method, provides a better product for our state and saves taxpayers money and rewards highly skilled individuals and contractors. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Melander. Is there anyone else who desires to be heard with respect to this bill? Questions, comments, concerns from members of the committee? If not, Chair, renews the motion that House File 571 be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on GovOps. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much, Representative Hillstrom, and folks, appreciate your testimony. Next up is House File 1335, Representative Poppy. This is with regard to real estate appraisers, consistent use of the State Building Code's definition of story above grade required. Chair will move that House File 1335 be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on out of the consent calendar. My kind of bill. See, that will take about 45 seconds, Representative Pop. Welcome to the committee.
Let's hope so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 1335 provides uniformity to builders, appraisers, and mortgage lenders regarding the definition of story above grade. The bill adopts the State Building Code as a reference for the definition of story and story above grade. Periodically, the State Building Code is updated through adoption of a national code, and currently it's using the International Building Code. This particular provision is found in the International Residential Building Code, Section R202, under definitions. With me today, I have Troy Breitman, who is a contractor builder, a person who has done some innovative kind of design and building, and he would like to speak on behalf of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. Welcome to the committee.
What do I have, 15 seconds left?
About.
Okay. In a nutshell, I found out that the state appraisers do not have, according to the Commerce Department, don't have a state guideline on what is above and below ground square footage. And if any of you have ever had an appraisal done and your basement's all finished off and the appraiser says, nope, it's a basement, this is designed to have everybody, realtors, appraisers, and building officials all play off the exact same definition, which is very clear and concise.
This is completely unacceptable. That's just pure common sense, and we're not used to that around
you
here.
Think so.
But frankly, thank you very much. That is the sort of thing that we'd like to be able to accomplish around here. Unless there's questions or comments with regard to that, Chair will renew his motion that House File 1335 be recommended pass and refer to the consent calendar.
Thank you very much.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank
that
you,
passes. Mr. Thank you both very much. Next up is House File 754. Representative Mullery will move that House File 754 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on GovOps. This is licensing plumbers statewide. Representative Mullery, welcome to the committee. Your own committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I believe there's an amendment being passed off. Do you have?
Chair Mullery has a... your own amendment, is that right, the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
You desire to move that amendment, Representative Mullery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We would move the amendment A1 to get it in the shape that we want.
Okay, it's on its way to being passed out. Sorry, folks. As soon as we get it, we'll move that amendment and shape it up into the... But maybe you can explain it as we go and explain the bill. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, back in the 1930s, the law was put into effect when we started requiring licensing of plumbers in order to protect people. But in small towns, apparently there was connections and not even running water in some places. And they accepted out places under 5,000 in population. And obviously we've changed a little bit since then, and we have a lot of protection for people nowadays. And we want to make sure that people have safe water in their system. And also, since most of these towns are connected to municipal water systems, if the plumbing is screwed up, it could pollute and have damaging effect on the health of everyone involved in these small towns. So what we're doing is requiring them to have licenses also, but there is a restricted license which would work for ones who have, I believe it's 2 years of experience in working in those areas, and they would be grandfathered in to work in the future on this. And we have worked with the department, and they are in support of it, and all of the contractor groups that I know of are in support of this bill. And the amendment is that is going on is a provision to help the contractors so that if their supplies are defective or something, they can sue in Minnesota rather than having to go to sue in the state of the supplier. So I think that summarizes everything about the whole package. I believe everyone has the amendment now, so we could put that on here and get it in.
Do you want to move that amendment, the A1 amendment, then, Representative Mueller?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Mullery. And my understanding, Representative Mullery, is that there's kind of peace in the valley with respect to the amendment. Just about anybody that was out there that might have a say in it or want to have a say in it thinks it's an okay way to go.
I have not heard any opposition to it, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions or comments with regard to the amendment? Otherwise, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Representative Mullery, anything further that you desire to add? Otherwise, I see you've got two.
We've got two expert witnesses here today, and Tom Hansen, Carl Crimmins from the United Association, and they would explain more in detail about the bill.
All right, gentlemen, welcome to the committee, and if you can, as you know, we've got a couple more items to try to wander through, so if you can keep your comments as brief as you can and still get your point across.
Mr. Chairman, this will be real short. My name is Tom Hansen, H-A-N-S-E, and I'm president of Minnesota Pipe Trades, and we really thank you for the opportunity to talk today. Mr. Crimmins is going to talk about a quick outline, and I'll kick him if it gets too long under the table, because I know how fast and what you have to do today, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Mr. Crimmins.
Mr. Chairman and Representatives, I believe Representative Mullery did a fine job explaining the bill. I thought that the President, Tom Hansen, and myself would just stand for questions. Since there's no opposition, we'll stand for questions if there are any.
And let's ask, is there anybody here that desires to be heard in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, the questions, comments. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mullery, it seems like when this was put in place, it was put in place for towns under 5,000. What has changed that we're going to not have the issue of getting licensed plumbers in rural Minnesota in communities of 200 people, 300 people, whatever? What's changed to make this need happen today?
Good question. Representative Mullery.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Simpson, the need? Representative Simpson, the consumer protection nowadays, I think, as you would recognize, has changed. We want to protect the consumers, and we're doing that. I see no reason that we would be bound to what we did in the 1930s as far as consumer protection. That's one large thing that I can see. If I assume that since you have towns probably under that you would want to protect the people in your towns from having polluted water. And this just assures that, and yet we're protecting the people who have been working as plumbers in those small towns without a license. We're protecting their businesses by grandfathering them in. So unless you have further...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that question. Also, once they're licensed right now, they don't have to be insured. They can come and work in your home. They could damage your home. You would have to either use your homeowner insurance to fix it or try to sue the person for his personal assets. If they're licensed with the Department of Labor and Industry, they do have license insurance requirements that they have to meet. So that way, every homeowner would be guaranteed that a plumbing contractor coming to your home is bonded, insured, and able to do the work. So that was one of the big things. Plus, the small towns are going on municipal water systems now. And as Representative Mullery stated, in 33, a lot of these people were on private wells and septics. Now, with the wells being polluted, more and more small townships and cities are going on municipal water systems, where if you do something in your home, you could pollute the entire piping system of the town, where before you were just polluting your own well. So we thought we would take a proactive stance and try to bring these people in the fold, get some protection for the consumers, and get them licensed in the same step.
Okay. And well, to that point, I think consumer protection is a great thing, and I think we need to have it. But I'm just kind of curious, is the Plumbing Association the one that's pushing this, or is it consumers that are pushing it? Are we seeing an outcry from the public in rural Minnesota that says we really need this to happen?
Mr. Chairman, sure. Representative, we were contacted by the plumbing, heating, and cooling contractors, and some of their contractors in greater Minnesota, in Alex and Far West, were calling in saying they had a problem in those towns, and they wanted to see if we could do something this year to help protect the citizens and to get everybody licensed in the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Crimmins, thank you. Representative Simpson, is there anything further from any other questions or concerns? If not, Representative Mullery renews his motion that House File 754 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on GovOps. For the discussion, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And on that motion carries, congratulations, Representative Mullery. Next up is House File 1336. Representative Mahoney moves House File 1336 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on GovOps. This deals with the Council of High Pressure Piping Systems being established, and fees required. Representative Mahoney, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you, committee members. You heard the plumbing bill earlier. This is the High Pressure Piping Systems Board. It sets up a board within the Department of Labor and Industry to deal with high pressure piping systems. It has a high pressure piping inspector, a licensed mechanical engineer, representative of the piping industry, four high pressure piping contractors, two high pressure piping journey persons, and two representatives of the utilities company.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. I know Representative Burns has an amendment. Folks, I know that we got the wine in grocery stores bill coming up, and it's one of those topics that has people buzzing. But some of our committee members, frankly, are having trouble hearing the testimony. So if you do have conversations, either keep them very quiet or take them outside the committee room, please. Representative Burns, you would desire to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, Chair.
And can you explain it, please?
Yes. Basically, it's the same as Representative Zeller's amendment. It just takes away licensing from the board. And I don't want to repeat everything I said earlier. It's the same premise. This, when a board has the power to give a license, it has the power to take one away. That's a quasi-judicial function. This and the previous plumbing board we talked about would be the only ones that don't have consumers on them to help weigh in on that quasi-judicial function. And, you know, whether you're a CPA, dietitian, optometrist, physician, nurse, physical therapist, pharmacist, on and on, there's 20 boards, 20-plus boards that all have consumers on them. And I think actually it helps the profession in that Minnesota consumers know that they're represented on the board. And to specifically respond to Representative Mahoney's concern about some of the complex things you'll be dealing with, I absolutely understand this is it's a profession and it requires a lot of education to be good at it and a lot of experience, too. And the majority of your members will have that high level of experience. But if you have someone who dies during neurosurgery and that case goes before the medical board, there's, I think it's four consumers who are on that board and help make the decision. There's a lot of other doctors, too. And if it's a legal matter, the rule against perpetuities is something I don't understand. But you may have to deal with something complex through the Attorney's Professional Responsibility Board, which does have consumer members. So I think there's the ability to deal with that. And, I think it's a common sense thing. It helps protect consumers. And I think it strengthens the profession. So that's why I offer the amendment.
Representative Mahoney, your response.
Mr. Chair, again, I'm not sure that the consumer is, well, I actually don't see consumer in here. This is removing the licensing language in 1336. And I'll just tell you, there's a contractor out there with more than 200 high-pressure piping violations and hasn't had his license pulled yet. I think it's about time we have professional people, and that's under the Department of Labor and Industry that has refused to pull that. It's at this point in time, with the structure of these boards and the power that we're giving them, they'll start pulling licenses from people who do bad work. Pipe fitting is a dangerous business and can cause great damage if something goes wrong. It takes professionals, well-licensed professionals, well-trained professionals, and people that make mistakes should have their license pulled. And it takes people who know what they're doing to decide that you've got to pull that license and get that person out of the field. So I would oppose this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Paulson, you caught on to that quickie. We're trying to pull anybody omitting page two.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was just going to say it's hard to follow the bill when one page is missing for what the amendment is.
We apologize, Representative Paulson.
I don't know if members have a copy. I just wanted to know what we were amending, Mr. Chair. So.
And we've had some copier issues, Representative Paulson. I've noticed that they've been around here fixing them, but... we've had some issues getting amendments copied, and folks, just a reminder, we don't have a 24-hour rule. I don't like to treat people like like third graders, so, you know, and I recognize that sometimes amendments don't get done till last minute. I assume that's what's happening here. But the sooner you can get them to our folks, the better it works for everybody involved. We have the A1 amendment before us. Is there further discussion, comments, or questions with respect to that? Otherwise, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. Further discussion with respect to the bill?
Mr.
If not,
Chair?
Representative Mahoney renews his motion.
There is a...
Oh, I'm sorry.
193 amendment, and I'm going to guess that this is my amendment. That
Representative
changes.
Mahoney moves the 0193 amendment. Is that right?
That is correct. It changes the word, deletes the word council and inserts board. Deletes council of, and after the word system and inserts board. I could go down the whole list, but in the sense of time, what it's doing is changing the word council in this bill anywhere that you see it.
We're a step ahead of you, Representative Mahoney. The motion is withdrawn. Is there further discussion of the bill? Seeing that, Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 1336 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on GovOps. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
That motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. You also have a two for today. We've got House File 1208, which I assume you... recommend to pass and send to
finance.
Representative Mahoney.
I have a couple of amendments here. The A2 amendment, that was my start of my explanation on my last amendment. Wherever it says advisory committee, advisory board, advisory council, it changes it to board.
Representative Mahoney, let's pause for a moment. My understanding is we first need to move the delete all because the amendments have been drafted to the delete all.
Correct.
All right. Representative Mahoney moves the delete all to put it into the shape that he wishes to proceed. Is there further discussion with respect to that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion prevails. Next is the A2 amendment. Representative Mahoney moves the A2 amendment, and that's the one you were in the process of explaining.
Correct.
Please proceed.
On page 17, 54, 55, and... Again, on 55, it changes advisory to board, advisory committee or council to board. On page 85, line 24, it changes the word apprentice to apprentices. On page 164, line 28, strike shall meet at the call of the chair, of the commissioner. It again, it strikes the.
Representative Mahoney, if I might interrupt just briefly, are any of these going to be substantive changes or are they
only
technical changes?
They are not.
We obviously hold members in high integrity. If you represent that they are technical changes, we'll take you at your word unless anybody on board says otherwise. If not, we'll take the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. You have one other amendment, is that right, Representative Mahoney?
I thought I had two more, but it might have to get passed out, but I can do the 285 one fairly quickly.
Okay, we'll move the Representative Mahoney moves the 0285 amendment.
What this does is it directs the Department of Labor and Industry to explore the possibilities of incorporating the adaptive design elements in the state building code for the following international residential codes. What we're trying to do is make handicap accessibility a little bit, take a look and see if there's ways we can do a better job. It is not requiring them to adopt. It is not requiring them to make any changes to a code. It is asking them to take a look at it and report back.
Representative Mahoney, is there peace in the valley with respect to that amendment? Are you aware of any opposition?
I'm not aware of any opposition.
Thank you. Any comments, questions with respect to that amendment? Otherwise, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries, and I believe we've got one final.
This is the one final one, the 07 amendment.
Let's make sure that we've got that one. Is this one representative?
That's the one. That's the important one for me.
You're lucky we got a couple of minutes, Representative Mahoney. Please present your amendment, the 07 amendment.
Essentially, what this does is it exempt 1091 Hyacinth, St. Paul, from any code inspection.
And Representative Mahoney, who might live at 1091 Hyacinth?
I'm sure it's just one of my constituents.
Representative Mahoney withdraws the 07 amendment to the bill. Representative Mahoney, let me ask you this: is there, as far as you know, is there any opposition to the bill?
There is no opposition to the well.
The bill as amended, I should say.
The bill as amended. There is still ongoing talks. We're looking at the low voltage. They came to me this afternoon. The low voltage language. This morning, the firefighters came to me, and they are concerned about some of the language in here. And I have committed to both of them that I will continue to work on this once it gets to finance. They did not have language, and I am trying to figure out the correct language. Firefighters are in it in a multitude of places, and low voltage, as Representative Paulson and I talked about prior to the committee here, it's in a number of places, and we need to find the places that it's all in. But the low voltage was basically a deal cut. Was it 6 years ago, 4 or 6 years ago? By the time it passed the House floor, it was 134-0. I am not going to undo any kind of deal that was cut and created peace in the valley. And the firefighters, we are having ongoing conversations about fire code and public safety.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, as he just had stated, it was 6 to 8 years ago, I was the author of a bill that settled the difference in the battle or the war that existed on this low voltage issue. And on a preliminary look at the bill, it looked like there were potentially two spots in this bill that might be changed in that agreement from a couple of years ago. And so, Representative Mahoney, if you can just have your assurance that you will, you know, make sure we don't undo any of that agreement from a couple years ago, because that was strong bipartisan support, and I think we want to continue that into the future.
You have my word on it. I will make sure that this that compromise is held true to its word from 6 years ago in this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Is there other comments or questions with respect to that issue? Representative Knuth, I knew that you had an issue that you wanted to discuss as well, or a motion that you proposed amendment, the 0294 amendment.
Well, we actually have to change the amendment because it was written for the Search Committee in Grove Ridge, but the OPM amendment was the 807-0294 amendment, but if we change it to amend House File 1208, delete all amendments, change 807-0239, and then
and let's make sure that folks have. Does everyone have the amendment? It's the 0294 amendment. And I'll just look for acknowledgement that folks have the amendment. All right. The oral amendment. It's not even an oral amendment. It's just as the author desires to present it, would be on line 1.1, delete the words, the first committee in Grossmont, and insert the words, the delete all amendment, open parentheses, A07-0239, close parentheses. That's the bill that we're now working off of. And then on line 1.3, it would be delete 36 and an insert 35. Is that correct, Representative Knuth?
Yes.
Okay. Is everyone clear with respect to what the amendment is? Okay, Representative Knuth offers the 0294 amendment as amended. Representative Knuth.
Basically, this amendment comes out of a constituent contact me that very concerned about escalator safety. And we have a bunch of statute that came into law in January that addressed a lot of it, but I contacted the Department of Labor and Industry. So I would like to improve our escalator safety if they saw anything else that needed to happen in statute. And basically what this does, we have law addressing an operating permit, but it doesn't clearly address the fee, and there's some additional language that clarifies that and when we say elevator, it includes both what we traditionally know as elevators and escalators. So what this does is it clarifies that every one of these devices needs a manual operating permit, and then it establishes a fee for that permit, and then when we are actually doing these permits, it establishes the timeline and then the criteria to qualify for it. And so it really just makes it, it clarifies what this permit is actually trying to do, making sure that we keep track of our elevators and escalators and then make sure that they're functioning appropriately. This is just a way that the department can make sure that appropriate testing is done and make sure that these devices are operating safely.
Thank you, Representative Knuth. Representative Mahoney, you have a reaction to the amendment?
I'm reasonably comfortable with the amendment. I just was wondering where it says escalator, or is it...
Well, it's an elevator in...
Representative Knuth.
Representative Mahoney, it covers both elevators and escalators under that definition
and
other statutes.
My question then, Mr. Chair and Representative Knuth, is does this also cover moving mechanical sidewalks?
Representative Knuth?
I'd have to defer to
someone from
the
department.
There's a rather intelligent looking fellow standing there nodding.
Mr. Chair, this is
Representative
Tom DeWakeham from the Department of Labor and Industry, and I think maybe if you would just sit down and assure us on tape that would include mechanical sidewalks, I'd be more than comfortable with the amendment.
Mr. DeWakeham.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Tom DeWakeham, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Labor and Industry. Our definition of elevators encompasses all of escalators, elevators, lift devices, moving walks, pretty much even the car devices we have out at the airport are elevators or horizontal elevators. So pretty much covers all of that information.
I'm comfortable with it.
Thank you, Mr. DeWakeham. Representative Zellers, and then we'll go to Representative Mahoney.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess maybe to the man from the department. This says no person may operate an elevator without first obtaining an annual are we licensing bellboys now?
Representative Mahoney or Mr. DeWakeham, who'd like to take the bellboy question?
My understanding of the word person in this whole bill, it defines a corporation, but I will defer to Mr. DeWakeham to see if I'm misreading the bill.
And Mr. DeWakeham, we have 27 seconds before we're going to take up line with dinner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney is correct. That does not address... it addresses the corporation. It does not address an individual operator of a device.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. DeWakeham. Representative Mahoney, are you willing to take the amendment then as it's... Is it a friendly amendment to your bill?
I will incorporate this as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We will... do that. Are there other questions or comments with Representative Anderson and Simpson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I noticed in both Representative Knuth's amendment and also in the delete all that you have that you are changing where the deposit of fees go. It's traditionally supposed to go to the state treasury. Can you tell me where that money will go now?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, that goes to the construction code council. I'm trying to think of the exact words. For many years, all that money went to the state treasury. It was a source of ill will amongst many because they would end up with $1.5 million or $2.5 million or $4 million extra that the department, all the code enforcement and permits would create. That's why, as I said earlier, there's a reduction in fees. They're trying to get down and follow the state law that says they can't collect anything more than what the service costs. And taking it out of the general fund and putting it in at the Department of Labor and Industry with their fine finance division will be able to track a little bit better.
And folks, if it's all right with you and Representative Simpson, I know you're up next, but with your permission, we did give a time certain to the folks that wanted to talk about bringing wine into grocery stores. And I'd like to, since we... Essentially, I believe, just have committee members now participating in the discussion of this bill. I'd like to lay it over for a half hour or so while we take up the time certain bill that was scheduled. And then we'll come back. We'll deal with that bill, and we've got one other bill beyond that. Is that all right with folks?
Yep.
All right. With that in mind, thank you, Representative Mahoney, and thank you, members of the committee, for your deference in allowing this bill to be heard at a time certain. I think there might be one or two people here today that will appreciate the fact that it's being heard at 5 o'clock. We will have then House File 997. Chair will move House File 997 be laid over for potential inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. For folks that have been before this committee before, they know that there is a liquor bills will always be laid over for potential inclusion. The omnibus liquor bill will likely be before this committee either a week from today or Thursday at the latest of next week, and we'll see what makes it. We've allotted 15 minutes for some proponents, 15 minutes for some opponents, and Representative Kahn, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for your motion. This bill has been before the legislature for, I think, close to 6 years. We're looking at joining. We're not looking at doing anything very exciting or different. We would join 33 other states in doing this. One of the states I spend a lot of time in, because I have kids and grandkids living there, is the state of Oregon, and they do it, and it's a very good experience in terms of the state. I'm going to turn this over to people who know very much more about the subject than I do. I think you've been given a fair amount of material on it, and let's go to the people who are coming. Just say their name and say who they represent.
And thank you, Representative Kahn. Folks, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for listening to us today. My name is Jamie Poole. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Grocers Association with a cold, so excuse me. I will move this along. What you probably already know is that Minnesota grocers evolve constantly to meet customer demands and the changing competitive market we face. Our customers want the convenience of one-stop shopping, but that's a double-edged sword for our industry. What you may not know is we constantly face the pressures of new competition. Non-grocery stores regularly add grocery items. Walgreens offers refrigerated and snack products. Office Max sells candy. And the latest, a large home improvement stores are now adding grocery aisles to better serve their customers. Frankly, the competitive walls have been torn down in the retail industry. Only alcohol sales remain fenced in. And Minnesota grocers, in an effort to meet our customers' expectations based on their experiences in other states, think it's time for wine sales. It's time the fences came down. What you probably know, Minnesotans support wine with dinner by a greater than 2-to-1 margin. What you may not know is our customers shop in other states. When they visit a cabin in Wisconsin or take a trip with their family to Florida, they are able to buy wine in the grocery stores. And next to those grocery stores are full-line liquor stores, fully stocked and generating profits for their owners. Those Minnesotans keep asking us, why does this work so well for grocers and liquor store owners in Wisconsin, Florida, and 31 other states? Why does Minnesota keep these fences up? What you probably already know is Minnesota consumers pay way too much for wine in this state. That's because Minnesota laws haven't kept up with the rest of the country. Studies demonstrate that Minnesota's retail licensing laws are more restrictive than that of other states. The Office of the Legislative Auditor concluded that Minnesotans would save at least $15 million each year if wine was sold in grocery stores. That's $15 million in a tax on Minnesota consumers, a monopoly tax. Dr. Charles DeSib of the American Economics Group in Washington, D.C., says the entire monopoly tax that Minnesotans pay each year for alcohol sales is more than $444 million. So wine sales are just a small portion of the total monopoly tax that Minnesotans pay. What you may not know is who profits from this monopoly tax. Yes, municipal retailers receive a small portion of these excise profits, which they do invest in their communities. But you must understand that less than 20% of Minnesotans buy alcohol from municipal liquor stores. Privately owned retail liquor stores receive part of the monopoly tax also, but not as much as you may think. According to Dr. Glenn Whitman, an economist at California State University, Northridge, the real beneficiaries of the current system are the wholesalers and distributors. In his book, Strange Brew, he demonstrates that the current system of liquor regulation primarily benefits wholesalers and distributors, not retailers and manufacturers. That's why the beer wholesalers, among others, are such strong opponents of wine with dinner. That $444 million largely lands in their pockets. No wonder they've built such strong fences that have withheld public pressure for so long. What you probably know, municipal liquor operations will not suffer greatly under this bill. Minnesota grocers want to sell wine with dinner items, not hard liquor or strong beer, which makes up the bulk of the profits in municipal liquor stores.
and competition will not end the sales of wine in municipal liquor stores. Competition will force them to sell their wine at fair prices than they currently do. What you may not know, I'm almost done, is only 221 cities in Minnesota offer off-sale liquor stores, which means more than 80% of Minnesotans don't live in cities with municipal liquor operations. More than 40 cities lose money on liquor operations, meaning that property taxpayers are subsidizing the operations in these stores. 124 municipal operations are in cities with fewer than 1,500 people, meaning there likely isn't a grocery store there large enough for those to offer wine sales. That in 89 communities with municipal liquor stores affected by this bill, the impact on their city budgets from this competition will be less than 0.5% of their total annual city revenue. 0.5% of 89 cities in Minnesota, that doesn't sound like a good reason for fences. It sounds like a call for a smart compromise, and grocers are ready to work on that. You are likely to hear from opponents of the bill who will include private and municipal liquor store owners. Frankly, they like the system the way it is, and who can blame them? If you are an owner in an industry with limited competition based on laws that are more than 70 years old, why would you want changes? Unfortunately, the world does change. For all arguments you hear about public safety, municipal revenue, mom and pops, this is really fairly a simple debate. The existing liquor industry benefits from Minnesota's restrictive laws thanks to the sturdy fences that have been built. They can charge prices that are higher than in other states. They can make substantial excess profits from those sales, over $400 million each year. And the grocery industry wants to break down that fence because we sell products responsibly, we compete in a world without fences, and our customers are tired of not having the same conveniences the people in other states have. The question for the committee, do we really need these fences? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next person we'd like to hear from is Mary Kowalski from very famous name in grocery stores. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee,
Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Mary Kowalski, and my husband Jim and I own 9 grocery stores in the Twin Cities metro area. That's 8 Kowalski stores and a Cubs store, Cubs franchise store. I have been before this committee several times. I have the same message, and that is that our customers want wine with dinner. I think in the past we've put a lot of cards on the table for you to see our customer database. And this year we set up tables in our stores to ask our existing customers about being in favor of wine in grocery stores. And 5-1, we had the cards available, so if they were opposed, they had a way to get their voices heard. But it was 5-1 that they wanted to have wine with their dinner. That was a change from just having a database of people with a bunch of cards. We talked to people individually at the store level. So the consumers want it. And grocers also want wine with dinner. There's no question, or wine in grocery stores, because first and foremost, customers want it. Second is we're trying to stay in business and stay competitive as well as the liquor stores are. This industry has changed where most of all of our product lines can be found, as Jamie had said, so I won't repeat that, from gas stations to drug stores. And to stay competitive, we need to be constantly finding new ways and to sell products and provide new products that our customers say they want. Our customers are telling us that they don't want to always have to make a separate trip to buy a bottle of wine. In fact, what we heard this year was that we probably just sell more wine because most of our customers said, yes, if I was going to buy it and it was here, I'd buy it. Otherwise, I'm not going to stop at the liquor store on my way home. So they'd say that they just didn't go and get it. We operate in a free market system in every other way except when it comes to wine. I don't know how we can protect the liquor industry from competition when you don't protect the rest of us. We have 70-year-old liquor laws that your own legislative auditor says cost Minnesota's consumers a lot of money, hundreds of million dollars a year. Wine with dinner is a very small change. We are not asking for spirits of any other kind or beer. And the savings to the consumer, as you've heard, would be huge. And we hear a lot also from liquor store owners that they need to hold on to the current monopoly or they will be at a disadvantage, especially small liquor store operators. We have a lot of small independent grocers that would benefit from a new item to sell that that could stay, would stay competitive by having this new product. But I'm also a local business owner, and I live, work in, pay taxes in, and contribute to my local communities as much or more than others. I employ 1,300 people in my communities, and I don't want to be put at a disadvantage either if you fail to make this small change to our outdated law. I won't do the rest because Jamie's already covered that, but I just want to address one thing. Why don't we open liquor stores? That's legal. You can put them up now. The point is, for many of us, we don't have the space or the money to do that. We don't want to sell hard liquor or beer or spirits of any kind. Just won't. We sell wine and food, and that's why many of us don't do that. My feeling, though, is that if it doesn't pass, that's what will happen. We will start to open wine stores where we can, where that's possible, and where we have the dollars to do so. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Kowalski. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Chuck Lynch. I'm the Vice President of Operations for Cub Foods, and I'm here to represent grocery stores. Grocery stores and the security issues surrounding the wine bill. Grocery stores have safeguards in place to sell wine safely and responsibly. Speaking specifically for Cub, we have got wine in our Illinois, our Iowa, and our Wisconsin stores currently, and we sell it safely. Youth access is not an issue. We responsibly sell controlled substances currently in Minnesota, such as cigarettes, 3.2 beer, wine coolers, and even fireworks, again, without incident. We comply with all state and local regulations without exceptions. Any theft or loss of inventory significantly hurts our business. So we have extensive systems in place to protect all of our products. As many of you know, the grocery industry operates on thin margin. Those dollars are very important to us. We have training and technology in place to prevent our associates and our customers from getting product illegally. For example, we require extensive training for our associates, not only new associates, but ongoing for veterans. We require a proper ID, Minnesota State ID, for every customer buying any bottle of wine, regardless of their age. If you've shopped any of our liquor stores that we do operate, you've been checked. I guarantee it, no matter what your age is. Cashiers must enter via that check the consumer's birth date into the system before the scanning can even continue. In our systems, you cannot purchase a product without asking for an ID and putting in a proper birth date. If our associate believes the ID is not legitimate, we simply do not complete the sale. If an associate who is not old enough, such as a 17-year-old cashier, our systems are knowledgeable, they understand who that person is, the item gets scanned across the system, and our front end locks up immediately. It then needs an override from a CSM of the appropriate age to complete the sale. We continuously monitor our checkout lanes visually and electronically. And our system flags usually flag any unusual activities and patterns. We do not offer second chances. Unfortunately, if an associate breaks any of these rules, it's termination. We will do everything necessary to sell wine safely and responsibly in all of our stores. Our technology and operating procedures are standard in the industry. This is how grocery stores operate today. As grocers, our business is dependent upon the reputation and our consumer trust. I can't put a value to the word of the name of Cub Foods. I know it's large. We would not put that at risk at any time, and we are certain that we would be responsible to offer wine in our stores. I'd welcome any of the members to join us in a Cub tour so we can demonstrate the security and the practices that we offer. I also want to note that we're here representing 7,000-plus Minnesotans that work in our Cub stores. They're our friends. They're your neighbors. They're your family. 99.9999% of those associates are extremely honest. We're not here to point fingers at any one system. If there is a weak one out there, we will catch them and we will stop them. If you have any additional comments, I'd be willing to, again, take you through a Cub store. Thank you.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Representative Kahn?
I think we're probably out of time. We have not much support from Local 120, which is one of the biggest locals of the Teamsters, so they're here too. And I guess I assume that you want to hear the opponents and then we'll stand for questions, or we'll stand for questions now, whatever your pleasure is, Mr. Chair.
No, that sounds fair, Representative Kahn. I think what we'll do is we'll take the balance of the testimony from the opponents then, and we'll have folks stand for questions after that. But thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
And those who desire to testify in opposition to the bill, I've got kind of a list here of, five folks. I'm assuming you've kind of given some thought to who's going to chat with us first. But welcome to the Commerce Committee. If you just identify yourself and proceed with your comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. My name is Dan Barn. I manage the liquor operations for the city of Bemidji. Although there are many reasons to oppose this bill, I just want to take a quick moment to say that passage of this bill would be detrimental to our community and to our business. For years, the municipal operation in Bemidji has put the profits back into the community. We've done such projects as street repair, major road projects. We've contributed to the arena. We've contributed and built the new library. We also donate substantial amounts to the Boys and Girls Clubs, which we feel is an investment in our future. So passage of this bill would be jeopardize those contributions. In addition, we employ 19 people at the city liquor stores. 18 of those, which are union employees, work for the United Food and Groceries. I meant to bring some with, but because of the scheduling problems there, I was unable to. But those 18 employees feel that if this were to pass, that their jobs would also be in jeopardy. I urge you to oppose this bill, and I thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you.
My name is William Herring, and I am the Public Safety Director and Police Chief for the City of Woodbury, and I'm here representing the League of Cities on the City of Woodbury. My message is very brief. We are opposed to the bill on the basis of public safety, that increased access to alcohol by juveniles is not in the best interest of our communities. In the past 3 years in Woodbury, we've been able to reduce juvenile alcohol offenses by 39% through cooperative efforts with our liquor stores, and we're concerned that we could see a reverse in that trend. Increased access is a legitimate public safety concern, and we therefore oppose this bill and encourage you to do so also. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Herring. Mr. Gertesmeyer, welcome to the committee once
Mr.
again.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Gertesmeyer, and I work for Joint Council, Teamsters Joint Council 32. Represent all of the Teamsters and local unions in the state of Minnesota, Iowa, North and South Dakota. In 2002, we were asked to get involved and take a position on wine in the grocery stores. We took written positions from the grocers, the Associated Beer Association, the Licensed Beverage Association, and the four major players that are involved in this. Our joint council took those under consideration and came down with a position of opposition to wine in the grocery stores. One of our local unions asked that we reconsider that in 2003, and we did. We gave all four parties about a half hour's time. They came in and made their presentation before our executive board, and again, the decision was made to oppose wine in the grocery stores. This is a very difficult issue for us. We have members on both sides of the issue. We now have two local unions with members within their own organizations that are on both sides of the issue. One of the locals has Super Values here. They're one of our best employers. They're one of our larger employers. The contract is great, and they are just a great supporter of our food show. Briggs Cooper, on the other hand, is a premier employer of ours in the liquor industry. And Johnson Brothers and the beer distributors, wholesalers, those contacts aren't shabby either. So this is a very, very difficult issue for us. And maybe quickly I can just enlighten you as to how we came down on the position of being opposed. The municipal liquor stores, and I think we should, my personal opinion is that we're not just talking about wine in the grocery store. We're talking about wine and beer. In 33 states that have this, nobody has just wine. It's wine and beer, wine and more, but it's not just wine in the grocery stores. If that happens, I've handed you out a position paper, 70% of the volume of the municipals would be affected. There are 226 municipals in over 200 cities, 50 of them in the metro area. They generate a profit of $19 million. We can talk about some not being profitable and some not making so much money. The bottom line number is $19 million profit in the municipal liquor industry in the state of Minnesota. With cuts in the LGA, and we're here listening to committees talk about no new money, and if we would affect the municipal liquor stores to the degree that they weren't functional, we're going to have to come up with $19 million. So underage access is a problem. People will talk to you about that. I'm not going to take a lot of time, but this is a huge issue for us. And what brings us down in opposition is the damage to the municipal liquor stores and to the privately owned liquor stores. But we have members that work in the municipals. We have about 45 or 50,000 and plus some retirees that live in these cities that have municipals. And when somebody can come up with an idea that would make up the $19 million if we impacted them to the point that they weren't functional, then I think we'd reconsider our position. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Curtis Meyer. Mr. Kaplan, welcome to the committee.
Chairman Atkins, members of the committee, my name is Sam Kaplan. I represent the Minnesota Wine and Spirits Wholesalers. Minnesota Wine and Spirits Wholesalers sell 100% of the spirits in the state of Minnesota and the overwhelming majority of the wine sold. Mr. Jim Farrell of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, Mr. Paul Kapsack of the Muni Association, Ms. Jennifer O'Rourke of the League of Municipalities, and Mr. Michael Madigan of the Beer Wholesaler Association all have yielded their time to me, and I'm most appreciative. I might observe, albeit rhetorically, that this is the seventh year that we have been in this process. The makeup of this legislative body has changed dramatically during that seven-year period, and yet the conclusion is always the same, and one must wonder, when will this come to an end? I think it's important to recognize the distinction between what you're being asked to do and what goes on in the 33 states that already have wine and grocery stores. You are being asked to disenfranchise people who have a privilege granted by the state. If you will go back and examine those 33 states, you will discover that those states, in their wisdom, decided at the time of creating their liquor distribution system that there would be wine and grocery stores. This is unique. This is taking something away. This is a privilege that is a meaningful privilege. People are in a position where they pay a license fee in order to sell liquor in the state of Minnesota. They're not permitted to sell groceries. They're not permitted to sell anything else. And they're subject to very rigid control in the state of Minnesota. We have a license. We have people operating in the licensing department and in the regulatory department. It always has occurred to me that this is a place where Democrats and Republicans should meet. We're losing small business people all over the state of Minnesota every day. Here is an opportunity to preserve a body of small business people who work every day in their stores. To be sure, there are some large stores that exist today, and they are competition for the smaller ones. But in the main, those 800 package stores that are operating as part of the MLBA are operating on a basis whereby they are competing to make a living. Now, the argument is, it's been said, well, this is competition. Let me remind all of you of what Ms. Kowalski was saying, and that is, it is certainly appropriate for anyone to open a liquor store with a separate entrance in the state of Minnesota. And several people have done that. So as a result, you only need to look at the operations of Costco or Sam's Club to understand that our clients are being vigorously subjected to competition every single day. And that's okay. That's the way it's supposed to be. They pay for the privilege of having this, and others are entitled to do that as well. We have yet to see this extraordinary desire to change the operation in the state of Minnesota. We hear from the law enforcement people, what you've already heard today, that there is a need for being sure that we regulate the control of this substance in the state. That's what we do. If people don't do it correctly, they lose their licenses. That's the way it's supposed to be. And so what we have done in the state of Minnesota is had a system that works pretty well. They say it's 70 years old. And I fail to see that alone being justification for changing anything in the state. Some of you were at my 70th birthday party not long ago. under the circumstances, it seems to me that this is a perfectly sensible system we have. It becomes tiresome to continue to debate these issues. We think that we have a claim, if you will, a claim to continuing operations. Now, the question will be asked to me, don't your clients benefit by having wine in grocery stores? I can't answer that question at the bottom line, but I can answer it at the top line. Yes, it will increase our revenue. I can't tell you it will increase our net income. But I can tell you that our clients have been used to dealing with people who are retailers in the state of Minnesota sometimes for three generations or more. We are loyal to our customers. They're very, very important to us. It's all we have to make our businesses work. And under the circumstances, we think you should continue to support them. Don't have a lot of small business people left in the state of Minnesota. This is one of the last vestiges of that, and we thank you for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Kaplan. Ms. Thomas, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Thomas. I own and operate Thomas Liquors, 1941 Grand Avenue in St. Paul. I had the honor of addressing you earlier. I feel very privileged to be able to come back and take some of your time. I am a small retailer. I have been in the business for 59 years. My son is my successor, and he will be taking over our business. He's been in the business for 30 years. When I went to work for my father in 1958, the first thing he did was to hand me a book of the liquor statutes. He said, read it cover to cover. You've got a lot of responsibility in this business and a lot of obligations. I want you to understand them all before you do any work for me. So I did. I read the statutes cover to cover. And then he said, Jim, we are one of the original licensees in the city of St. Paul. We have to set an example for the people that come after us. And I've lived by that mandate for 59 years, and I'm very proud of my business. I think this legislation that's proposed would be very detrimental to our industry, not because of more competition, but because it would dilute our business to the extent of, there's currently 100 licenses in Minneapolis and St. Paul. This bill would create at least twice as many licenses, maybe three times as many licenses. Convenience isn't always good. You only have to look to the fast food industry and see the result they've had on our society. Overweight and obesity is becoming rampant. I'm not going to take any more of your time. I just want to say I appreciate your time, and please don't fix something that ain't broke. And I will entertain questions, and I thank you for your time. I failed to say that I represent the Beer, Wine, and Spirits Association, and we oppose that bill. So if there's any questions, I'd like to ask them.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. And there may be some questions eventually. I think the goal right now is to get all the testimony. Is there anyone else that wants to testify in opposition of the bill that's part of the kind of the 15 and 15? And by the way, I appreciate on behalf of the committee and everybody here the efforts to stick within that time frame. I appreciate that very much because it does leave a few minutes for questions and comments from members of the committee as well. At about 5:45, we'll lay the bill over for potential inclusion in the omnibus bill. But it does give us a few minutes for questions or comments from members of the committee. And I also want to have Representative Kahn come back. We always give the chief author the final word. And we certainly want to hear from Representative Kahn and whether or not she wants us to pop the cork on wine with dinner this year. So is there comments or questions from members of the committee at this point? Otherwise, we can take Representative Mahoney.
Just one for Representative Kahn.
seems how part of the argument is such an integral part of the argument is the lowering of a syntax on one issue. I've got another syntax that's out there. I'm wondering if you'd be supportive of lowering the syntax on another particular one, being the tobacco. I mean, it seemed pretty important to save money for people on wine.
We were all wondering where you were going with that, you know. Representative Kahn.
Well, Representative Mahoney, in light of what Chairman Atkins said, I was going to invite the committee to wine with dinner, but I don't know if that's a allowable thing to do.
Not on campus, it isn't.
But, you know, I think we'll take these one issues at a time, Mr. Mahoney. And I would like to point out again the representative from the Commercial Food Workers and Teamsters Local 120. And if there are any specific questions about the labor support of those bills, those people are available to answer that. I just want to just very quickly respond to some of these things. Beer is not in this bill or ever. The grocers have assured us they do not want it. They see that their interest is in, and in the interest in direction in which they're going, is being able to have wine. The access restrictions in this bill are stronger than in any liquor store. I guess the next thing to ask is to ask the liquor stores if they would be willing to live by the restrictions that are in this bill. We're talking about a privilege granted by the state. The state doesn't usually grant privileges to one private industry over another private industry. The small business argument is, again, this is a choice between two types of businesses. Not all grocery stores are Costco's or Sam's Club who can afford to have that separate entrance right next door. So, you know, I think, and just because we haven't done it for 7 years, well, my colleague, Representative De La Forest, did scalping through this committee after I had tried it for 20 years. So maybe I'll try and hand this bill off to him. So, you know, I think there are a lot of things that changed, and one of the things that's changed is the grocery business, and this is a change they would like to move along with. And I'll just answer any questions or bring back any of the people with me for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Paulson, you asked earlier if we're going to have an opportunity for questions.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if you're going to ask questions. If we can ask questions of people who are here,
feel free.
I did have a question of Mr. Was it Gurmeister? Gertis Meyer?
And just as he's coming down, my intent is to roll back to Representative Mahoney's bill and take Representative Clark's testimony on that final bill as well. Representative Mr. Gertis Meyer, welcome back.
Thank you. Mr. Gertis Meyer, one of the things that just sort of struck me in your testimony, the comment about the municipals and the $19 million, I mean, it seems to me that if that's the case, it seems to me to your testimony, you're saying that, you know, we should only have municipal liquor stores. I mean, if you follow that logic, and that's all we should have in the state. So aren't you saying that other cities that don't have municipals are disadvantaged because they don't?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paulson, I've had this discussion over time once in a while about does the state belong in the liquor business and, you know, in private industry more or less. That's kind of a mute question. We're there. I mean, we have 226 municipals, whatever it is. And it's generating this profit. If we could turn back the clock and does the government belong in the liquor business, I don't know. But the fact is that we're there, and the only way to undo it is to take them out of business, and then we have a $19 million hole. I'm in fact, if I could just one comment. We handed you out a paper written by a class project by Apple Valley assistant manager. That, in 12 pages, does more to talk about the liquor industry in the state of Minnesota from prohibition and the reason for the three-tiered system and the municipals and whatever. So, but it comes down to a $19 million profit, Representative.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I'll just follow up. It seems to me we've had the testimony from the opposition today, and most of that testimony seemed to focus on protecting small mom-and-pop businesses. But I have to tell you, if you take this as an issue itself from a consumer standpoint, I mean, there's no doubt. No one disagreed that testified in opposition that consumers want this. I mean, there's no doubt about that at all. That's very funny. I mean, I have a pretty thick list of emails. This is actually the issue I've heard most about this session. Now, you wouldn't think that. That's kind of surprising to me, actually, that would actually be the case. But nonetheless, it is true. And most of those emails have come from women, mothers who are busy with time. They like convenience. And in Eden Prairie, we have municipal liquor stores. I have a mayor who actually supports allowing wine to be sold in grocery stores. It might be contrary to what you may normally think. But you know, I think a lot of suburbs in particular, like Eden Prairie, where time is an issue for families, you know, they're looking for that convenience. And no one will dispute as well that, you know, the auditor says we're paying $15 million more dollars in costs. I think consumers are looking for a better price and convenience.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paulson, let me take the first part of that first. The issue of the surveys and people expressing, there isn't time tonight, but I think if you talk to Mr. Kapsack from the Municipal Liquor Store Association, you'll find that it depends on how the question's asked. You ask people, are you in favor of wine with dinner? Sure. But if you go into some of the side effects and the aspects of it, then it changes dramatically. And the second part of your question was?
Well, I'm not sure so much it was a question, Mr. Cruz.
But I have an answer comment. For it. But I'm so busy worrying about the first part that I lost the second part.
Mr. Chair, I mean, we had a bill up a little while ago that Representative Mullery sat at the same table right here and said we were changing 1930s laws to protect consumers. Okay. And it seems to me this is exactly what Representative Kahn is trying to do on a broader, much broader level.
Thank you, Representative Paulson. Are there other comments or questions for members? Representative Knuth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would be for the representative from the Grocers Association. And I've heard a lot about this discussion, probably more from lobbyists and people coming around. But I have a question about youth access and building up a company. Getting my ID I appreciate the testimony of the representative of Pub Foods, and I know that Pub Foods has a lot of resources that some of our smaller grocers might not have, and I'm just wondering, are there, in terms of all these fantastic access restrictions that we have, I'm just wondering if small grocers will have any issues addressing that in terms of making a training program or restricting it and access in that way. So if you could comment on that for smaller grocers that don't have a lot of the resources that they come to.
Ms. Phil?
Certainly.
Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Representative Simpson.
Maybe I could answer that. Being a small town grocer with three lanes, I think I handle that very well. I have the same lockout system that Cub Foods talked about. We have the same ability to do the same thing. We also have the same laws and same restrictions that if I sell underage 3-2 beer, if I sell cigarettes underage, or if I sell Minnesota State Lottery tickets to someone underage, I can be fined for it. So, yes, we do, as small retailers, have that same ability.
Hard to top that, isn't it?
Yeah, I did that well, didn't
I? Are there other? Yeah, well said, Ms. Gould. Representative Sims.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess due to that, and as a grocer, I just have to kind of stick up for my associates out here. The police chief, if he'd be kind enough to come back down, I just had a question I'd like to ask him. When you made your testimony, sir, you stated something about you reduced youth alcohol in Woodbury by 39%.
That's correct.
Could you tell me that 39% factor, was that being bought then at retail liquor establishments?
No, sir.
I just call on people is how it works, and then the record shows. You're the chief, shoot you.
Hey, he's got the gun, brother.
Say, he's got the gun. Chief Eric.
Thank you. No, sir, those are not strictly violations of purchasing alcohol at licensed establishments. Those are all liquor violations in the city of Woodbury, which would include possession or consumption by a minor.
So then, sir, I think the testimony of 39% is a pretty big number.
Yes.
That is being bought at a retail establishment. Hmm. I mean, to say that you reduced this by 39% is not saying it's coming out of establishments. Well, I'm sticking up for the liquor industry here. It's being purchased through other agencies, through other youth, or however, I don't know how they're getting it, but that would be the correct way to say it, wouldn't it?
Chief?
I think that's correct. I think, like I testified, we have very good working relationship with our liquor establishments. and we control it pretty well.
And just one more follow-up then. With you, I assume you probably have a Cub food store in Woodbury. Have you had any issues there?
We have a Cub food store and a Kowalski's food store, and we have had no issues with those stores.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Sellers, we have a quick one. We still have Representative Clarksville that I want to make sure that we take up. But
sure. Quick. Mr. Chairman, maybe if Mr. Kaplan could turn to the witness stand, please. Feels like that today, doesn't it? Mr. Kaplan, on behalf of some of those folks that have opened up the same door, separate entrance facilities, and then on behalf of some of the folks who've specialized in wine, the folks who built an industry around being an expert on wine, what kind of an impact, we've heard about what will happen to the municipalities, but what kind of impact is it going to have on those folks who have made their business specializing, whereas now you may or may not have that specialty, or those folks when they did open up that grocery store with the separate entrance, was there this huge influx? So the need that we're hearing has maybe already been addressed, or there wasn't necessarily a need in the first place.
As succinctly as possible, please.
Mr. Chairman, let me just say that the view is that the opportunities for a wide range of purchases will go down, and that the grocery stores will, if they have wine and grocery stores, they will sell the most widely purchased product, and therefore the opportunity for those little wineries to be sold in Minnesota will substantially diminish. One other point I would make in connection with this, the comment is made again and again and again about how it costs more to buy in the state of Minnesota. The reason it costs a bit more to buy in the state of Minnesota is that in 1973, we were the only state in the country to eliminate supplier's choice for spirits. And as a result, in this state, spirits are sold at a much lower level than our neighboring states. And you make it up, to be sure, with a higher wine price. But these stores operate on that basis. And I'd love one last point, Mr. Chairman, and I would simply point out to you that I'm pleased to hear that people are active in the political process. But this process by the Grocery Association is one that is a huge, well-financed process where they are being encouraged to contact you, and that's the way the government works. But to suggest that this is all a natural response is, I think, somewhat naive. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Kaplan. And with that, folks, we do need to lay
I
the bill over.
Make one comment.
Of course, Representative Kahn. You were the
just one comment on that,
member.
Because part of my life experience is in the state of Argonne, where I have kids and grandkids. And Argonne is a great store for having wine in grocery stores. And I assure you, the selection of wine in those grocery stores is absolutely terrific. Connected to the local vineyards, and it's really a nice place to go buy your wine.
Thank you, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman,
and
I'm not sure if Representative Kahn would know this, but maybe some of the folks who testify can pass this on, but I'm just curious, following up on Representative Zellers had said, Florida is a grocery store wine state, and why is it, and my understanding is, in Florida, liquor stores are trying to open next to grocery stores. And so, I mean, that's a strange phenomenon. So, I mean, if you buy into the logic that the opponents are using here, that doesn't make any sense. So I'm not following the logic.
And thank you, Representative Paul. So we do have, as I anticipated we would, we've got some lingering questions, but remember this was merely an appetizer with regard to wine with dinner. The bill will be laid over for potential inclusion, as all liquor bills are. I would leave it at this, which is that I would welcome comments from members of the committee on whether or not you believe this ought to be included in the omnibus liquor bill. I will also be cognizant of what the Senate does or does not do with respect to this bill, and that will be a guidepost for whether or not it's included in the liquor omnibus bill. With that, we will lay that bill over, and Representative Mahoney, thank you for Representative Clark, I know is here. We've got House File 1609. And folks, we still got business to do, so if you can be as quiet as you can on the way out, I'd appreciate it. Representative Clark, I will move House File 1669 be recommended to pass and referred 1609 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Civil Justice, And thank you to Representative Mahoney for showing some deference to a non-committee member. His bill's actually up, but we wanted to give an opportunity for your bill to be heard. Representative Clark, welcome to the committee. We are kicked out of here in, well, very shortly. So okay. The quicker you can go, the better it would help. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you, Representative Mahoney. Members, what I am bringing before you today is a bill that strengthens the whistleblower protections that we have in existing law for employees, both private and public. And just suffice it to say that this bill gives some additional protections, and I'm going to maybe forego going through them exactly. It does provide for civil actions, and the Commissioner of Department of Labor will be able to take action to protect employees, state employees in particular, who have issues with discrimination or inability to do their job because of pressure from their employers. And what I wanted to do today, because we have such a limited time, is ask one of the individuals who in our state has really taken a lot of risks and worked with us, Mr. Chairman, took a lot of risks in her own job and actually filed a whistleblower lawsuit and eventually had to leave state employment because of it. She's a woman who warned us all of some issues that had to do with environmental health more than a year and a half ago, and they've all been on the front pages in the last month or so. But she paid with her job for telling the public about these issues. And so I'm going to ask her to tell her personal story. Mr. Chairman, I should take a few minutes to do that, and then I'll come back and answer any questions that people might have.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and member of committee. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Would you be so kind as to identify yourself?
My name is Fadine Olyai, and I have been with Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for 16 years. And in fact, a year and a half in January of 2006, I had to forced to resign my position after the 16 years of work there. I have, I have a PhD in environmental science with a background in chemistry and biology. And for 16 years at the agency, I've been involved with evaluating toxic chemicals and their impact on the environment, wildlife, and human. During the last 5 years of my employment at the agency, I was coordinator of new emerging contaminants that are not regulated, including flame retardants, and the most recent issue was with the perfluorochemicals, PM Scotch Guard chemicals. And the problem that I had with most recent issues during the last 3 years of my employment, when the Commissioner Corrigan from 3M became a Commissioner of MPCA, I was practically rejected for any research investigation in regard to perfluorochemicals, and I had to go through extra miles swimming against the current to do my research, which I am very pleased that with all the obstacles I had, ultimately, as you have seen in the news recently, that became a very important issue in regards to contamination of drinking water in Washington County and Lake Elmo Cottage Grove, and now extended to practically seven different cities in the eastern part of St. Paul. My problem started with requesting for grant and practically being rejected from the immediate supervisor and trying to go to the higher level of authority to get support for investigating this chemical in Minnesota environment, and constantly being harassed and threatened to lose my job if I pursue this issue. I finally approached the commissioner of the agency in 2003-2004, when she was almost a year after her position as a commissioner. And the very straightforward response that I received from her, knowing that she was in fact in her previous job at 3M, the most involved person and corresponding with MPCA in regards to perfluorochemicals. She told me that if I pursue this, this is not a kind of job at PCA, and encouraged me strongly to look for a job somewhere else. As this issue became more important, hot and important, actually worldwide, I got some requests for interview from public radio, and I was directed with the managers, on the contrary to other staff, that if I have to talk to anyone at the media, I should inform my managers. I informed them, and in front of them, I had, in fact, an interview at the agency. And after the interview, after a series of interaction and continuous harassment, I received a reprimand from my immediate supervisor, which was in fact the first step to officially trying to push me out of the agency.
See, Max, if I might, I know this. I don't want to be rude, but we're going to get kicked out of this room in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
And most of the, or many of the issues are going to be within the purview of the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee, which is where some of your comments are starting to go now. And my suggestion would be that you conclude the testimony with regard to the, you gave a nice overview, but we should probably move the bill into that committee where some of the testimony can continue. Is that fair? And I look at the author too, but does that sound all right with you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Summarize
by saying, Mr. Chairman, that this did culminate in Dr. Lay's job being terminated. She did a settlement, and eventually, all of the kinds of work that she was talking about and trying to bring to public attention were vindicated. And one of the things that happened is that the Senate did ask for her to come and testify there. And one of the things you'll see in the bill is that when employees are asked by legislators to come and testify about information that they have, they should not be punished for that. They should not be lose their jobs over that. And that's basically what happened here. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess with that, I guess I know this bill would be moving on to the civil...
Public Safety and Civil Justice.
And I'd be glad to answer any other questions. And we have, certainly documentation of... What you've heard so far.
Well, let me ask, is there anyone here that desires to testify in opposition to the bill? Or anyone else that desires to be heard? Questions, comments, Representative Zellers?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and this, as it goes on to public safety, maybe this is just a question or a concern for the author. On page two of the bill, where it says what the definition of a scientific study, maybe it wasn't page two, I apologize, I might be on the wrong, yeah, I'm sorry, page four, my apologies, where what is a scientific study, it says study that the employee in good faith believes with the internet and, Joe, Representative Atkins and I could be experts on a lot of things on the internet, and unfortunately, if we don't go to Mythbusters or some of these sites that disprove... either pop culture or some of these things, we could have folks that unknowingly, granted, but bringing forth what they believe because they read it on the internet is to being a real live scientific study, and it's nowhere near.
Why don't we, Chairman, Representative Clark, why don't we just leave it as something to think about as you travel on?
We do actually have an amendment.
And I was just going to move that, in fact.
I think that would might answer your concern, and I did work with the business partnership about that so that it clarifies.
Very good. The chair will move the A2 amendment. Is there further discussion, comments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Further comments, questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, chair will renew his motion that House File 1609 be recommended passed and referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Civil Justice. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Thank you, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank
Representative
you.
Mahoney, welcome back. Thank you for your patience. House File 1208 is picked up off the table. Again, the recommendation is to pass and refer it to the Committee on Finance. Representative Mahoney, any final parting comments?
Good bill, pass it.
Mr. Chair. We do have, we'll do it by motion to amend the AO7-0285 amendment just to insert the page number and line number on line 1.2, that would be page 48, in line 27, and on line 1.3 it would be section 59. Is there any discussion with respect to that? That's moved by Representative Mahoney. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is adopted. Representative Simpson, I'm sorry I interrupted you. But
that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to know, I'd just like to go on the record as saying, as I page through this, Representative Mahoney, we have penalties going from $1,000 to $10,000. We have bonds from $5,000 to $25,000. Insurance required from $25,000 to $50,000. We have fees from $10 to $15, $20 to $30, $50 to $75, special inspection fees from $30 to $80, reinspection fees from $25 to $35, and I just think I hope the public's aware of this, and I hope that everybody understands. We've heard a lot of rhetoric about fees and raising issues around here the last few years. Well, I see a lot of the same thing in this bill, so I hope I hope everybody understands what's happening with this bill.
Thank you, Representative Simpson. Representative Mahoney, I assume that's why there's a referral to the Finance Committee for further discussion
correct,
of the
sir.
Fees. Is there any further comments or questions? Otherwise, we'll renew the motion made by Representative Mahoney. I did want to make one thing so the record's clear, Representative Mahoney, that this does not conflict with the completed operations bill. Is that true? I've got a deal in with regard to completed operations matters.
If I'm speaking of the same bill, I don't believe it should.
All right, then we're fine. With that, Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 1208 be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on Finance. For the discussion, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. With that, we stand adjourned. Thanks, folks.